The Disney Brit Podcast is sponsored by Attraction Tickets Direct and Complete Orlando. At Attraction Tickets Direct, they recognise that people nowadays want to be free from package holiday restrictions and to avoid paying prices inflated by travel agent commission. Because they don't sell through travel agents, they are able to offer attraction tickets at unbeatable prices and offer expert advice. Furthermore, the service they provide is second to none since their lines are open 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. 7 days a week. Customers receive their tickets within 7 days and there are no hidden extras such as credit card fees or postage surcharges. You can call them on 0800 975 0002 or visit www.attraction-tickets-direct.co.uk. Complete Orlando are here to help simplify your Orlando holiday. They specialise solely in arranging holidays to Orlando and can therefore provide you with an expert advice and knowledge on this magical destination. They have expert staff available 7 days a week and can personalise your whole itinerary using their range of hotels, private villas and apartments to suit all budgets, as well as car rental, scheduled flights, theme park tickets and travel insurance. Their whole range can be totally tailor-made to offer complete flexibility and fit your individual requirements. Call them on 0800 294 8844 or visit www.completeorlando.co.uk. Don't forget to check out some of their current offers. At Attraction Tickets Direct, they are selling a 14-day Disney ticket for the price of 7 days. With every child Disney ticket purchased, you can get yourself a free exclusive Disney autograph book. And with every child Orlando Flexi ticket purchased, Attraction Tickets Direct will give you a Kids Eat free card worth £10. Kids can also go half price with the Pirates Dinner Adventure. And the Pirates Dinner Show offers an evening of fantastic entertainment and delicious food, making the experience the most unique interactive dinner show. Offers are valid for departures in 2009 and bookings made between May the 19th and the 31st of July 2009. Complete Orlando, if you book your Orlando holiday this summer, you'll enjoy free Disney dining plus 14 fantastic days in the Disney parks for the price of 7. And the summer 2009 holidays, why not go for 14 nights from only £419 per person? You can save from £1,140 with free nights at the Universal Resort Hotels, and if you're staying for 14 nights, you only pay for 8. And this is available for travel up until the 18th of December.
Ah, salam and good evening to you, worthy friend. Please, please, come closer. Too close, a little too close.
This is Julie Andrews. Once upon a time, there was a magic kingdom made of hopes and childhood fantasies. A timeless place where every land was filled with wonder. A place where everyone who entered its gates would be given the gift of the young at heart. The power to wish upon a star and unlock its magic. Are you ready to wish upon a star? Then it's time to open your heart and remember, dreams come true.
Welcome to episode 16 of the Disney Brit Podcast for Wednesday, the 27th of May, 2009. Well, what have we got for you this time? Well, we've got our usual news and rumours section. Juz is going to join me for that. And we also have another special guest. We're then going to bring you the quiz questions for the 11th Disney Brit Trivia Quiz. And then we're going to bring you the results of the top 7 must-sees that you decided on for Walt Disney World. We're then going to bring you some listener emails and finally going to bring you some announcements for the end of the show. So, without any further ado, let's get on with episode 16 of the Disney Brit Podcast. Music.
Good morning, Zazu.
Checking in
with the morning report. Fire away.
Welcome to the news for episode 16. We have with me, as always, Juz. So, hello, Juz. You there?
Hello, Adam. Hello, Disney Pop people.
Yeah, Disney Pop people. Still going strong. Is it 170 now in the group on Facebook?
It's more than that, I'm sure.
Is it really? Well, we also have another special guest who's joining us this time, and that is, you may have heard his name a couple of times on the show, Joseph Carter, who is a blogger over on joethedisneyman.blogspot.com. I think that's right, isn't it, Joe? So, welcome.
No, that's wrong, actually.
Is it? Go on, what is it?
I'm kidding you, it's right.
Oh, dear me. See, pair of you. You're going to be the death of me. Right, OK, let's get on with some Disney news then. As always, we're going to start off sort of America, and then we're going to bring ourselves over to the European side. We're going to give you some Disney news that sort of isn't park-related to start off with, and the first bit of news is quite a sad bit of news, really, and that is the death of one of the greats over at Disney, and that is Wayne Allwine, who passed away past a couple of weeks. You may not know who he is, but you will certainly know the voice that he creates. And he was actually the voice of Mickey Mouse. He's been doing it since 1977. And he first voiced the lead of Mickey Mouse in the new Mickey Mouse Clubhouse. And he died age 62 from complications with diabetes. I think we can probably quite safely say this is news that is of saddened the Disney community, but also has a huge implication on the future of Mickey Mouse as he was, really.
Yeah, I think the situation is these days is the fact that they can keep on, that the computer technology allows voices to change. I just think it's a huge passing, isn't it? It's a passing of time, I think, and that's the worst thing about it.
I mean, on top of this as well, I mean, he was also married to Russie Taylor, who did the voice of Minnie Mouse.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So it's almost like Minnie has lost her Mickey, so it adds an extra sort of element of sadness to it, I suppose.
And I think from my point of view, it's the fact that Mickey Mouse, he has always been Mickey Mouse ever since I've known Mickey. So that voice has always been in the parks, in the films, on television. And suddenly we're going to have a brand new Mickey Mouse. And it's whether or not that Mickey is going to live up to the Mickey that we have already.
Yeah, I think the problem is as well. He just keeps jumping in, Adam. We're going to have to cut him out of this show already. Let's get rid of him. Well, I was going to say it was, yes, it's the same for me. Yes, 1977, that's when I was a young lad too.
12, 14, 16, I don't know.
Exactly. So I've already transitioned into one voice.
Yeah.
Well,
go on, Joe.
I was not even around then. I'm quite glad to say.
I'm not the youngest anymore. I love it. Apparently what has happened is Wayne Allwine, knowing full well that obviously he was struggling with his diabetes and knew he wasn't going to be around forever, actually was part of the audition process for the new Mickey Mouse. So he was in and quite instrumental in finding who was going to be the new Mickey. So it's quite nice that, you know, obviously there should be some element of continuity with him being involved in the voice that he already did.
Yeah, I think the issue, this big thing here is the fact that, and you've probably noticed it anyway yourself, is the amount of Disney legends who are passing away at the moment.
Yeah, of course.
And this on top of it as well, it does feel like, even, you know, what Walt died, you know, 30-odd years ago. But now we're starting to see more of Walt's legacy disappear in some way. It feels like you're losing something.
And you've recently got Marty Sklar said he's now going to retire, so that's yet another sort of man that worked with, I suppose, probably the last man that worked with Walt Disney who's still working with the Disney company. He's going now. And yeah, you're right, these legends are slowly disappearing from within the Disney company, and that's sort of this legacy that's beginning to disappear and will really just be known as history and folklore, I suppose.
Yeah, well, for the youngsters like Jones.
Well, that's very nice of you. But no, I mean, hopefully it doesn't become folklore. I mean, you know, in regards to Walt Disney, he said these stories change know, the parks will always change, and that's the way he wanted it, I suppose. He wanted things to sort of move on. So maybe things will move on in a positive way. Let's just hope they don't go, you know, down the pan. But we've got our fingers crossed, of course, all the fan community have.
Yeah, definitely. OK, so we'll move on then to our next bit of Disney news that is sort of park-related this time, and that is our favourite subject, D23. Do we need to say any more? D23 events have been announced. Still no use for us Brits, really, but I just wanted to go through some of the, just a few of the D23 events that have been announced recently. First one we've got here is Thursday, the 28th of May. There's something called Up All Night, which is going to be a preview screening of Up. It's going to be in the El Capitan Theatre in Hollywood. It's designed, there's going to be some sort of stage show and obviously the screening itself, which... For D23 fans, I think if we look at it on the side of how much D23 fans pay, there's actually quite a good benefit to it as well. And we've got the D23's Flower and Firework Dessert Party, which is happening on Sunday the 31st of May. That's happening, obviously, at Epcot as you watch Illumination, starting off at 7:15 p.m. Again, it's going to be completely free, except for theme park admission, which is going to be required. There's then the... D23 Day at the Walt Disney Studios and Archives, which is going to be happening as well. It's going to be a two-hour tour of both the Disney Studios and the Disney Archives. It's going to be two dates in summer 2009. That's going to be June the 27th and August the 15th, starting at, obviously, Walt Disney Studios. But there's also all these other events that are coming up. There's events at Disneyland. There's a Disneyland USA film that they're going to be showing. New York, Chicago have Disney... Broadway shows that they're going to be reducing tickets for, as do Las Vegas. And also in San Diego, there's going to be another event, which is a preview of the Walt Disney Family Museum. So all of these events are going to be great for D23 members. And, you know, a lot of D23 members are saying how fantastic this is. But I think, again, I think it just proves to us, as we were saying a few episodes ago, that D23 just is not any use for us Brits still.
Yeah, I think, you know, what I'm willing to say to Disney is now...
Yeah, I do feel a little bit kind of forgotten.
...is the fact that we're willing to have a space in Mouse Meets for D23 to have its European premiere.
Yes, that'd be great. Hey, let's do that. No, it's never going to happen in a million years, is it? They've said that it's going to be centred in the USA for quite some time. And I think for that to sort of be embedded, they're going to need a good few years before they even think about bringing it over to Europe. But, yeah, that's the issue. There's no point having these fantastic free events, which we really can't access very well at all.
I think the issue here is the fact that, if I can have a jump on my bandwagon for a minute, is the fact that Disneyland Paris continues to do well for itself, and it sounds like downturn, because locals will always visit it. Locals, I mean, even us, will always still go across there.
Yeah.
In the States, locals, as in Americans, will still go to California, will still go to Orlando. What they should be targeting the market still at is the people who, like us, have to travel all that distance to go there. X million of people from Europe going across to the Americas. That's a big revenue stream, so they should be doing D23 to make sure that we still want to go the diehards.
Yeah, completely. I completely agree. Joe, what's your opinion on D23? Are you a fan?
I'll be honest with you, not particularly for me. First of all, I find it a bit annoying that Disney have said this is the official fan community, you know, as if to say everybody else is sort of taking the mickey, as it were. But so many, you know, of course, so many more people in Europe would be interested, I think, in joining the fan group. I say, if there was something in Disneyland Paris, it's not exactly too far for us to travel to go over there. If something's really worth, you know, like a history tour of Disneyland Paris or something like that. I think, really, to be honest with you, the only reason that Disney has announced these events, well, half of the events, is probably because so many people have complained. It's like Disney is now turning around and saying, oh, we'll do this for you, And for me, it kind of, it's you know, maybe it was something they had in the pipe, in the plans. But I just feel it's all been a bit sort of thrown together, if anything. Maybe things will change in the next year. Maybe there'll be something for us Brits.
Hopefully, yeah. Hopefully they'll do something about that. Okay, so let's move over to Walt Disney World then. Let's sort of go towards the theme parks. And first thing is a bit of news that I heard and thought, it certainly interests me. And that is Disney is to offer complimentary golf club hire to Walt Disney World guests. And it's going to be from a period of May the 1st to December the 31st, 2010. Now, Disney are offering complimentary golf club rental to Walt Disney World Resort Hotel guests only, OK? Not to everybody, unfortunately. I'm not staying in Walt Disney World this time, so it's not something I can sort of do on this trip. But the terms and conditions are as follows. So it's one complimentary club rental for any guest staying at a select Walt Disney World resort who purchases a non-discounted round of golf at one of the Disney Resort golf courses. Disney offers Titleist and Cobra rental clubs. They're actually pretty decent clubs. Disney Resort guests receive range balls and transportation to and from their selected Walt Disney World Resort hotel. Now, you must have your valid ID. That's not valid with any other discount, and tee times still need to be booked through DisneyGolf.com or 407-WDW-GOLF. So, a real incentive again. I think we were talking about when they got rid of the incentive that was there originally, then they replaced for Pleasure Island, that is, and replaced it with this golf. We were saying, well, actually, yeah, it's lovely that they're giving us this, but you're not getting the golf club hire if you've got golf clubs, you've not got golf clubs with you yourself. So actually, it's still costing you extra. So maybe Disney have thought about this, and that's the reason they begin to bring in this promotion.
I don't know. I mean, when I've played golf at Disney, I've never had a problem. I've always got a free club at Winter Summerland, so I don't know why this is big news at all here to me.
Yes, just for you. Just for you, this is. You can't play a whole round of golf with a putter.
Yes, you can. I have done it at Winter Summerland. And that's all you need. You don't need big golf courses. This is a vacation. All you do is Winter Summerland. Great fun.
Yeah, Winter Summerland is good, but, you know, for the serious golfer, then this is something, obviously, that's would certainly make me more interested in making sure I take time out of my vacation to go and play golf.
Yeah, Zoe would kill you.
Yes. But we'll leave that behind. Okay, water parks. Go on, Joe, sorry.
No, I was going to say, I mean, I have zero interest in golf, so, I mean, it isn't really going to help me out in any way.
Good man.
I have a handicap in golf. It's brilliant.
It's
called my golf clubs. Okay, water parks then. We don't really get over to the water parks very often. Yeah, thank you. I'll be here all week. The water parks we don't really venture into often, and there's very little news that happens there. And unfortunately, the news we have got is bad news, and that is that the water parks have increased their prices. Both parks have increased their prices by $5 for admission ticket. So adults is now $45 plus tax, and children under 10 is $39 plus tax. I know there's an increase, but I think it's the first time for a while that they've actually increased any of the prices, isn't it?
Could I just ask, have they actually increased the water park annual pass, or have you not looked at that?
I haven't looked at that. It's a really good point, actually.
Because that was always good value, because if you got that, by the time you hit third day, which is dead easy in a 14-day holiday, you've covered your cost.
Yes, I think it's just the regular admission tickets, as far as I know.
Yeah, I would always say to people, you can't get a pass.
You got an annual pass? Did you say, Joe?
No. I was just going to say I know why they've increased the prices.
Okay.
It's actually because they're actually offering now free golf clubs, so it kind of makes sense.
Joe won't be coming back, will he?
Yeah, no. You think you're funny? I do the jokes around here and just laugh. Stop it. So water park price increase. You know what do we think the reason for this is? Is it just inflation? Is it the economy or? Or is there a real reason for this?
I just think it's Disney increasing the prices again. You know, it's what they do best. I think they've looked at it. They've looked at the cost, the facts, compared to... Bearing in mind, as you quite rightly say, they've not put the price up for a while, but the park tickets have been going up year after year. So suddenly the water parks look even better value from the person going. So just put money up, you can get your money there. Yeah, on a hot day, you're guaranteed to be being full, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, summer. They have increased it just before the summer hits, when it gets hot and when people want to go for a swim, you know. So they've thought about it, and they've put it... for them at the right time to get people into the parks.
On the flip side of it, I'd say for $45, Typhoon Lagoon, you'll spend all day there, is absolutely worth its money. I think it's actually a fantastic place.
Completely agree with you.
Yeah. And also, if it won't make too much difference for the Brits, I don't think, actually, because the majority of us, I know I certainly do, get the 14-day tickets, the unlimited passes. So we have the all included anyway, to be honest with you.
Yeah, so it doesn't really make a huge amount of difference to us Brits with the ultimate tickets. OK, let's head over to the Boardwalk then. Again, another place that we don't go to very often. And Spoogles, the restaurant over there, is to become a buffet in July. Now, you may know that Spoogles is beginning its transition to become a new restaurant restaurant called Cuisina, and it's going to have a complete menu change. It's going to become a very Greek sort of Mediterranean restaurant. Spoodles are going to stop serving breakfast as of the 1st of July through to mid-August, and during this time, breakfast will be served daily at the Flying Fish Cafe, and that's going to be from 7:30 a.m. to 11 a.m. Then from July the 6th through to August the 1st, there's going to be a buffet dinner menu that will be served at Spoodles in place of the regular menu. The restaurant will then be closed completely for dinner beginning August the 2nd through to mid-August time, where I guess is when it's going to be thinking about opening as Cuisina. Don't know, have either of you two ever eaten at Spoodles? You know, is it going to be a loss?
I have. I found sometimes that the menu was a bit limited for the kids. So I'm still, you know, I really like Spoodles. I'll be really interested to see what's going to happen with this side of it. But from my personal point of view, and this makes me sound like a real common person, give me a corn dog and a beer just sitting by the lake and I'm happy.
Joe, have you ever eaten a Spoodle?
Yeah. No, I haven't. But, I mean, as Joe says, I mean, on the boardwalk, there's plenty of other fantastic places to eat. So I tend to sort of go there. But, yeah, I mean, it might be interesting. It might not. It might be a total failure. But we'll just have to see. I mean, do you know what Cuisina is all about? Do you know what the theming is at all? I haven't heard anything, to be honest.
It's going to be a sort of a Greek Mediterranean restaurant. It's a sort of American chef named Kat Decora who has taken on the restaurant and it will be running it as with her menu, basically. So it is supposed to be a Greek style. So it'd be interesting to see, because it doesn't necessarily fit in with the theme of the boardwalk. But to be honest, ESPN is there, and, you know, that's my draw. That's where I end up going to. You know, anybody who has televisions on the back of toilet doors is a winner by me. So I don't know, if Cuisina's empty, if there's if it's quiet, then maybe it was somewhere I'll try in the summer, but it's not necessarily going to be my first choice.
Well, this is it. I mean, Spoodles has always been busy when you go past it. What is strange here is the fact that we've got the Indian-style African restaurant open. We now have a Greek-style restaurant open. Are we not compensating for the countries that are missing in World Showcase? Or are they starting to test to see if these countries would fit into World Showcase by the attendance?
Yeah, it's a possibility that could be happening. But it does seem strange that Spoodles, obviously being such a well-loved restaurant, a restaurant that, as you say, is always busy, that they've closed that down to replace it with something else. It seems a bizarre choice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yes, let's move into the parks then. Let's head into Magic Kingdom as we do always. One piece of news for you, and it seems that the Hall of Presidents makeover is running on time, on schedule. Disney have announced that it will be a July opening, and it seems that Disney have managed to tie down President Obama. He has recorded his speech. He's apparently also given measurements for himself so that the actual figure itself looks like him. Disney have released a photo of the Obama animatronic with Imagineer John Kutry programming it. So it's quite a high-resolution photo that's about. Now, the show is said to have an updated film, and it's also going to include speaking roles for President Obama, George Washington, and Abraham Lincoln. Now, this is the interesting thing. The show is also expected to be much shorter than it was. It's expected now to be around 15 to 20 minutes instead of the sort of former 25, nearly 30-minute show that it was before it went down for this rehab. It's also interesting to me to see that George Washington, the first US president, finally gets something to say, because he's not really had that before, has he?
No, I think what's interesting here is the fact that Obama is a really popular president from both sides for different reasons. I think what's happened here is to reduce the time, because they know all of a sudden there's going to be a massive throughput hitting this attraction. Yeah. Reduce it, you get more people coming in and out of it. You know, this is suddenly, all of a sudden, Hall of Presidents, I think, is going to be you're probably going to find a queue there. And we've not seen a queue there for eons.
No, I think you're right. I think it will be interesting. And this animatronic is yet again supposed to be another advancement in the technology. It's not only that his mouth opens and closes by going up and down. Apparently his mouth is going to be able to form words. He's going to be able to move in the slightest way to really make him look real. And apparently Obama's really sort of taken to making sure it's the best it could possibly be. I think he was quoted as saying that actually it looks better than he does. But it's going to be great to see these sort of little attentions to detail and see whether they really have advanced the animatronics on that far.
So you could get away with it from Bush, couldn't you? You're not having to work for...
Sorry, Joe, you're saying.
But I mean, with With George Washington, I mean, it was about time that he had something to say. It really was. And I think they've gone back through the history books to see, you know, if there's any reports of how he speaks and how he walks and all that kind of stuff. But Disney actually probably did an experiment when they had the original show. They were probably videoing people in the dark and just seeing how long it took until they fell asleep. And they worked out 15 minutes was about the right time.
And we were talking about a while back this idea of Abraham Lincoln obviously being updated. And there was this talk that Liam Neeson was apparently creating a film with Disney to do with Abraham Lincoln and his death, and whether or not they've used Liam Neeson's voice. We haven't heard any updates on that, so it'd be interesting to see whether that has actually happened. Mm-hmm. Okay. Epcot, then. Let's jump on the monorail, head over to Epcot. And once again, we have one new piece of information for you, and it is that the Great Piggy Bank Adventure has now opened. This new exhibit in Innoventions is now available for everyone to go and enjoy. Now, the new attraction allows guests to explore the world of saving and investment through a series of fun and unique activities. At the beginning of each adventure, guests collect their own piggy bank and take it through the experience. At each activity, they must deposit their piggy bank to launch the game, and the score is recorded as they travel throughout the attraction. And there's a great online game that accompanies this attraction. If you go to piggybank.disney.go.com, there's a great little sort of online game you can play, which has three levels on it. Now, for me, until I found out a little bit more about how interactive it was, I was going to bypass this. I wasn't really interested. Going to Disney World, learn about savings and investment. Thank you very much, yawn. But having heard a bit more about it, this sounds really intriguing, this idea that you have your own piggy bank that you take in with you and it records all of your scores, things like that. Sounds like a great addition.
Yeah, I think, to be honest with you, the way we are at the moment, and I think we said this at Sam when it first came up, I think give kids any idea of the concept of saving, make it fun. I think now's the perfect time to drill home to children, this is what you do and this is how you invest and this is the savings, and I think it's a great idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's what Epcot does best, really, isn't it? It's delivering a really serious message for the future, which Epcot does really well, but entertaining at the same time. You know, it's perfect.
Yeah, definitely. And watching some of a couple of videos that have been online about it, there's an interesting idea that you put this piggy bank down and it gets sort of sucked into the machine, and your piggy bank then suddenly comes to life and becomes part of the game. And then as soon as you finish the game, it comes out the other side, you pick it up and you move it on and take it with you. And that's the sort of thing that is really going to really appeal to kids, that they're going to be able to do that and they're going to be able to play along and use that. And definitely do go over and have a go on the game at piggybank.disney.go.com. I was on it this afternoon and I was playing it for probably half an hour or so by the time I finished. It was actually sort of a really interesting, good entertaining game to play. Okay, let's move over to Disney Hollywood Studios then, where we have a few pieces of information. Firstly, Star Wars 2.0, has it officially been confirmed? Well, it hasn't officially been confirmed, but it seems that things are definitely underway. In a recent interview, Frank Oz, the voice of Yoda, was obviously asked when he last played the voice. Now, expecting a response for saying, oh, it was years ago, he said, actually, it hadn't been too long ago. He'd recreated the voice only recently for the new Star Tours attraction. And obviously, this was a bit of a, whoops, I've let the cat out of the bag. And apparently, the interviewer who interviewed him had sort of heard about this 6 months ago. Frank Oz had said to him, please, please, please do not say anything. But then apparently, Anthony Daniels let the cat out of the bag for C-3PO. And at that point, this interviewer said, right, I can now release this information about Frank Oz. So it looks like they've been working on Star Wars 2.0 for, you know, 6-8 months maybe now. So it's well on its way to being developed and to being put into the parks.
Yeah, I mean, the rumours I'm hearing on the grapevine is the fact that filming's taken so long is because they've gone 3D with it. Yeah. So I'd be curious to see what's going to come out of that. And if they go 3D with it and all the recordings be done, I think this could be a relaunch of this attraction.
And I think it needs it, really. You know, it's been around for so long now, and you can tell things. It is looking shaky. And in fact, one of the really interesting bits of technology I heard people discussing and sort of rumours that they're going to use fusion technology, which you can find at the disaster attraction in Universal Orlando. It just means that there's a three-dimensional character in front of you without actually using 3D glasses. You know, it's really, really impressive. Apparently, Admiral Akbar, if you're a Star Wars fan, is it's the guy that's doing that.
And you know, there's going to be more of a presence from Yoda, more of a presence from characters we see. We don't know whether Rex is going to survive this rehab or not. But it's also interesting that they've obviously been working on it for some time. So it may be that, you know, is this going to be ready for Disneyland's 55th next year? Is it going to be ready for the 40th in 2011? Is it going to be ready for Disneyland Paris's 20th? Is this something that's obviously going to be updated at every park around the world that Star Tours currently exists in? We don't really know, but I suppose once they've created the technology and created the film, it's just a case of replicating that for all of the other parks.
Yeah.
It'd be a shame, I think, if it doesn't appear in Disneyland Paris, because we've had the original, obviously, for so long. Mm-hmm. Okay, Luxor Jr. then, the mascot, I suppose, the icon for the Pixar Studios and for Pixar themselves, seems to be appearing at the studios. Some new construction screens have appeared in Pixar Place, and it seems Disney are installing a brand new animatronic. Now, this is of course, if I said Luxor Jr., it's designed that it's going to move, it's going to respond to guests, and obviously the light it has with inside it, being a lamp, is going to be able to switch on and switch off. Now, the animatronic has said that it's possibly going to be alive from early June. Something that I think seemed to have slipped under the online radar, I suppose. Nobody seems to have known anything about this. And suddenly something's being built at Pixar Place, and everybody's like, wow, how do they keep this so quiet?
Yeah, I think the great thing about this is that, well, we discussed this before, I think Pixar Place is a whole new area that opens up so many possibilities. And they're putting stuff in it which shows they're actually going to start investing in this and continue to invest in it. Pixar Place is going to be a lot bigger in the future, I think, and this is an example of that, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is, definitely. It'd be interesting to see whether this is something that's going to be a continuous movement thing or whether it's something that's just going to start come alive at night when they switch the light on.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard, apparently, I've seen today, actually, on the internet, that you can just about see the outline of Luxo in that area. So it's pretty much, it's kind of confirmed that he will be there now, and apparently it's quite big.
Yeah, it does look reasonably large. As you were saying, yes, some pictures have appeared online today. They've obviously got the usual construction screens at the bottom, and it's now sort of like a greenish mesh at the top, which doesn't quite stop you seeing what's behind it, and there does seem to be some sort of lamp shape behind there. So it'd be interesting to see just how big this is and how long it is until they complete it. Sticking with Pixar and sticking with Disney Hollywood Studios, there's the new character meet and greet from the film Up. You can now meet characters Russell, who is the wilderness explorer, Carl Fredrickson, put my teeth in, a 78-year-old balloon manufacturer, and Doug, his pet dog. They are going to be available daily inside the Art of Disney Animation. And I don't know whether you guys have seen the pictures of these guys, but they look fantastic. They look like they've done an absolutely amazing job on the characters themselves.
Yeah, I think my only complaint is going to be is why have we got Doug the pet dog and not Bolt?
Yes, oh, don't start on that. Yes, Bolt has disappeared. But it's interesting to see the difference between the Russell and the Carl characters that look not human as such, but to the actual size. And then you've got Doug the dog, which is obviously a lot bigger than he is. He's almost Pluto size rather than the size he's in the film. But it's interesting because they have, in the actual film themselves, they seem to have massive heads and not such big bodies. And it was going to be interesting to see how they create those characters in obviously meetable character form. And it looks like they've got the proportions exactly right to me. Right.
Yeah, I mean, something that...
Go on.
Sorry, I must stop interrupting, but I mean, I'm still a little bit upset with Pixar, because why did we have to wait until October for Up? You know, they get it so much earlier over in America. It's almost ridiculous this time we have to wait till October.
It does seem strange that we have to wait, because obviously the film's ready, and with a lot of things, it seems that we're beginning to get them at the same time as the US. But it doesn't seem that Pixar are doing that. And I suppose it's to do with the window of when new films are coming out, etc., making sure that they don't overlap with something else that might take the revenue that they want. But it would be nice to have a universal release date, so we don't have to wait around so long to find out what the film is like.
Tell you what I have noticed about Up, as one of the first films, is how clever they've been with promoting Up very silently. The Facebook page is unbelievably busy,
yeah,
and has been updating itself over the last few months. I think Pixar and Disney Pixar have been looking at more of a not subliminal But testing the marketplace with fans beforehand and getting everyone revved up more than ever before, you ask any Disney fan and they've known about Up for months now. Go and talk to somebody, Joe, public in the street, I bet they haven't got a clue about it.
No, and also the fact that Up was the opening film at the Cannes Film Festival this year, the first time a 3D movie has ever opened at a Cannes Festival. And that is yet again another piece of media, use of media, I suppose, that is very subliminal, and it's not something that you think about as advertising. It's just, oh, it's open can. So, yeah, they have been very clever about it, and it does seem to have been quite quiet over here. But it's certainly a film that I know I'll be queuing up to see as soon as it opens.
Yeah, definitely.
OK, let's go to Downtown Disney then, and we're going to head over to Virgin Megastore, of which we will find there will be posters up and the shutters will be closed and there'll be no staff. We mentioned on the last podcast that the Megastore was going to be closing on the 31st of May, right at the end of the month, but it seems that they've decided they're just going to close straight away, and it closed on the 12th of May, nearly 3 weeks early. And Megastore is no more. Virgin have moved out of the Downtown Disney area. We've got this massive place that's now empty, and it'd be interesting to see what they're going to do about it, because it's such a big, important space within Downtown Disney that it's going to look a mess if it's empty for a long time.
Yeah, I think the thing is, they had such a good offer last time we had our show. I can't remember, was it about 30% off, something like that?
That's right, yeah.
And I think, the stock had been flying out, because this store wasn't a store that was quiet. This store was always absolutely chocker, which is the bizarre thing about it. I think anyone who wants to open a store in Downtown Disney, where that store is now, would be onto a winner, because it was always busy.
Yeah, it was. I don't know, Joe, did you buy much from there when you were last over there?
I didn't buy much, but I looked an awful lot. It's a really, really good store. It's a shame it's gone, of course. But, the fact that they closed it 3 weeks early, for me, that makes me think something might be coming in, particularly soon. They want to measure up or get things ready for it. There's been a rumour, actually, recently of an IMAX cinema being built there, which I think could be a really, great revolution, to have a massive IMAX right in the centre of Downtown Disney. Give people more reason to stay around at night.
I must admit, I think that was my first thought, that if they've suddenly shut 3 weeks early, if something is coming to that space, it's that they maybe turn around and said, we need to get in earlier, we need to get in by the end of the month, you need to be moving out. So, saying to Virgin, we need to use your clothes now, we need to move. We don't need to become like those British storefronts where the half-ripped posters stay up and the post piles up on the front doormat. We want it to be used. We want people to get in there and to take it over. And, if it is an IMAX cinema, fantastic. If it's a new ESPN zone, which was another rumour that went around, fantastic. But it looked really sad if it was empty for a long period of time. Let's jump on a plane then, fly over to Disneyland Paris, where, yes, it's warm, just like it has been here this weekend. I got myself sunburnt on Sunday. I know. Listen, kids, make sure you use sunscreen. There we go. That's my disclaimer. It's lovely over there at the moment, and people have been flocking over there for what is our UK half term. And we've got some more information for Disney Village, and we reported that Starbucks was possibly on its way. We said when we were there that it was looking, that they were well underway with the actual construction work itself. And it now seems that the Disney Village map has got an added element to it, and that is a Starbucks coming soon star that is now on the Disney Village maps. So it seems that we were right all along. Starbucks really is coming to Disney Village.
Something we don't want at all. I think the only thing is when myself and Adam were over there, there's a lot of exterior studding going up on the wall, wasn't there? They're going to build quite a big fascia there. We looked at it, we couldn't quite figure out, because the studding was coming right out all the way around the building, wasn't it?
And we joked, didn't we, that we thought it was just going to be a massive Starbucks.
Yeah.
And never know, it might actually do that. You might be able to drink inside a Starbucks mug.
Yeah, one of the things I've seen recently online is they're actually putting up basically like bits of straw outside, bits of wood, so it looks like a massive basket. So I think it's quite an unusual sort of design to have a massive basket. I mean, as long as Disney keep the big name brands outside in the Disney Village, as long as they stay away from the parks, I'm happy.
Yeah, McDonald's is fine where it is. If it creeps any closer, I will be there with my picket fence and everything. That's it. Not getting any closer.
I'll join you.
Yeah, you know what I mean. Shh, picket line. That's the one.
So, what's a white picket fence going to do?
It's going to stop me. It's going to stop people from jumping over. I'll only let them through if they don't have a McDonald's in their hand. Thanks, Jess. I thought I got away with that one. Right, OK. There seems to be a new service anyway over at Disneyland Paris that's become available, quite widely available within the parks. And this is a new mobile application that's going to be available to guests. Leaflets have appeared around the Disneyland Paris resort explaining how you can access this park information from your phone. Now, according to the information, you have to text the word Disney to 31014. Now, before you pick up your mobile phones now, and text the word Disney to 31014. Don't do it. I've tried it. It doesn't work, okay? It does cost you normal rate, but it seems that it's only going to work within the parks itself. You have to be there. I think it uses Bluetooth to get the information across. You will then receive a text message, and it tells you how to download the application to your phone. Now, depending on the type of phone you have, it will either have to enter a code for the application or the application will load up straight away onto your phone. Now, this application is going to have park hours, special offers, restaurants, tips, videos, a things not to miss section, like attraction wait times. All of those things are going to be there for you to access when you're in the park to be out to use. Is this good? A good thing? Yes or no? I don't know. What do you think?
I think initially you go, whoa, what a brilliant idea. And then you think, hang on. Either A, I could watch the foyer of my hotel and look on the billboard they have there every day.
Yeah.
Or B, by the time I download the Bluetooth app, get it to work, get it running, I'm inside the park anyway.
That's true, yeah, and you can find out what time it is. I think the attraction wait time thing maybe is useful. It's a different way, I suppose, than putting up the attraction wait times around the park. They've obviously added another one to Discoveryland, and there's only one in Walt Disney Studios. So I suppose that's the only thing for me. But I think one of the things you mentioned, on your blog,
well,
is that this idea.
It's going to cost a small fortune if you're using a non-French mobile, I suspect. I think the charges that you'll get for using the internet.
Yeah, and I think you said on your blog, Joe, this idea that if you're looking at your mobile phone, you're not looking at, as we always say, this amazing architecture that there is within the Disney parks in Paris.
Exactly, yes. It would be a real, real shame.
And plus, it probably won't work on the iPhone anyway. Okay, so nothing works on my iPhone. It's not fair. So let's move into the Disneyland Park and let's look at a little bit of information from there. And this is something that I saw and I thought, well, it's not news that will particularly, let anybody sleep better at night, but I found it quite entertaining. And this idea that there was a small tennis tournament in the middle of Disneyland Park. And a few days before the Roland Garros tennis tournament in Disneyland Paris turned part of Main Street USA into a tennis court. Now, it was an orange tennis court, quite bright, and it was on Wednesday, 20th of May. Gail Monfili and Stanislas Wawrinka, that wasn't bad, didn't butcher them too badly, appeared at the park to play a special tennis match against Mickey. And there were also 200 children there. Now, that wasn't them playing against Mickey and 200 children. There were 200 children who were related in some way to this tennis coaching school that's related to Roland Garros, and they turned part of Main Street into this massive tennis court. Again, another nice way of bringing something slightly different in that we didn't know about beforehand. People would have turned up to the parks and gone, oh, wow, we've got a tennis court. Don't know why that's here, but it's something that, you know, you can probably stop and watch and see.
Yeah, I think it just shows what Disney does, isn't it, compared to any other theme park. Just wouldn't entertain it, whereas Disney goes that extra mile. It's not massively publicised anywhere else, but it's there. I think it just sums up Disney. You know, it's a great community theme park.
They had all the banners up as well, didn't they? These new banners that we'd not seen before that obviously had been created specially. So it's not that they didn't do it on the cheap either. You know, they created a big tennis court, they had the nets, they had all the boardings around the outside, they had the flags, all that sort of stuff. So it wasn't necessarily that it was a last-minute thing. It was obviously something that was planned. Okay, Walt Disney Studios then. We're going to hop across the courtyard. And finally, do we have a confirmation for Toy Story Playland? Well, according to John Lasseter, we do. Because during a recent press conference for Up, which was obviously, as we've already said, the opening film at Cannes, John Lasseter was talking about his relationship with Disney and his life within Pixar. And he let slip that Disneyland Paris are really getting ready to build a Toy Story Playland. And I wanted to play you a clip of the press conference right here.
And John, considering how many tasks are yours, what would be your big adventure, too? The man has so many.
My life is a big adventure. I mean, yeah. It can't get any much bigger. But I think with my wife, Nancy, and my five sons, you know, it's like sharing all of this with them, you know. And also getting a chance to work at Disney. Disney is such a fantastic company because I'm so excited Pixar is part of it, because when you create our job is to create a great movie, but no other company in the world that can take and make these characters come alive beyond the boundary of the film. And I get to be a part of working with Walt Disney Imagineering as well and creating theme park rides and all the Disneylands for our films. We're doing a new Toy Story Playland in Disneyland Paris, which will open next summer. And that's like bringing the Toy Story characters to life, you know, there. And it's going to be exciting.
Okay, so that is the press conference itself. John Lasseter openly admitting he is working with Disney to create a Toy Story Playland. So after our trip out to Walt Disney Studios and seeing the fencing that was up and seeing that the early preparation work, it seems that it is really building what we are expecting to be there. So it's quite exciting, really.
It is, and I think John Lasseter's not that stupid to let it slip. I'm sure it's been done as a timed thing, but it just sums up everything we've been talking about the last few months. I think it's absolutely awesome. I can't wait for it to get there. A long way to go, as we saw in the pictures when we took them off the actual area, which is just basically gravel and some drain holes, isn't it?
That's really all it was when we were there. Yeah, there was nothing there at all. But at least John Lasseter's now admitted to what's going on. I just wish Disney had said, right, we'll hold our hands up now. Yes, we are building Toy Story Playland. Here are the plans. This is when it's going to open. Mm. That'd be great now to find that out.
Yeah, I mean, if they one of the things I really hope they theme it in with is perhaps the story of Toy Story Midway Mania, because the story is that the characters are put on a big carnival for you, and with the kind of rides that I've heard, they've mentioned like a half pipe and a carnival-esque rides. It would work fantastically. It looks as if the toys have put it on for you. It's if you know the toys have built bits of toys and bits of boxed around the house like Rubik's cubes and made this carnival for you to enjoy.
I don't think we can necessarily rule out Toy Story Mania appearing eventually. You know, they've now announced it's going over to Japan, so the likelihood of it being built around the world, I think, is more likely now than it was. And with Toy Story Playland coming, it's a perfect addition. And again, it's going to be so much cheaper for them to build it this time round because they've already built it several times. They've learned from the mistakes, you know, and they've begun to create a much easier process for it. So hopefully, fingers crossed, we'll see Toy Story Playland, we'll include Toy Story Mania, and we'll get the new Ratatouille Dark Ride as well.
Okay. Yeah, I think with the Toy Story Mania, is surely now, within the next 12 months, you've also got yourself a sponsor in Nintendo for the new rides you're going to build, haven't you?
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe they're going to hold off until the new Wii game comes out, find out what the reaction is over here and see whether it's a possibility that they then add the attraction to Disneyland Paris. I suppose it's a fantastic way for them to say, play Toy Story Mania at home, and in 2011, come and play it for real in the park. You know, I suppose it's a good way for them to hook people onto that idea. Okay, also in Walt Disney Studios then, there's a new hard-ticketed event, and I saw this and I thought, fantastic, brilliant, we're getting to the hard-ticket event, until I looked at it properly, and I wasn't so impressed. And it seems that on Saturday the 26th of September, the FNAC.com and Disney are holding a brand new hard-ticketed event called Disney Disco Nights. They're going to turn the studio into a huge dance floor from 8:30 p.m. to 2 a.m. Stitch will be spinning some discs and people are going to be encouraged to dress up and add to the disco atmosphere. Now, not only are they going to have disco music popping into the actual park, there's also going to be Rock and Roller Coaster, Armageddon, Tower of Terror, Studio Tram Tour, Cars Rally, the Crushes Coaster and Flying Carpet are also going to be open for you to experience. Ticket price? Well, actually, it's a fairly reasonable €29. But, you know, is this worth attending? Is this definitely a hard ticket event that should become a regular occurrence, or is this something that they should do once and maybe leave behind? I don't know, what do you think?
I think the thing is, A, I'm a huge fan of Stitch, but I'm getting very close to being very fed up with Stitch because they're pushing him that much at the moment. And B, in reality, are you paying €29 to go to a disco, or are you paying €29 for perhaps a limited amount of people allowed in that at least you'll be able to have a go on Crush's Coaster?
Well, that's my thinking, that actually €29 for a limited number of people, Crush's Coaster is going to have a short queue. You can get in from 6 before, obviously the party starts at 8:30, you can get to the park from 6 p.m. But for me, looking at this hard-ticketed event, if you look at something like the Princess and Pirates Party, the Not-So-Scary Halloween Party, you get rides open, you get brand new parades, you get brand new stage shows, you get brand new experiences, where to me this is, we're leaving some of the rides open and we're going to put some music on. It's not quite, for me, a proper hard-ticketed event. Joe, I don't know, what's your opinion? Because I know you're out there around that sort of time, aren't you?
Yeah, I miss it by about 2 days. But to be honest with you, I don't think I'll go by myself to a disco. But the best, it's the best park for it because it has the open spaces and having, you know, huge lighting rigs and speakers lying around won't look too out of place, I suppose. But as you say, I mean, it doesn't seem to offer much more than just a few rides being open and a disco. So, I mean, when you have a other hard ticket event, as you say, there's so much more to offer. And Jez, I completely agree. I think Stitch is being used way too much. He's slap bang on the poster right next to Mickey and it does say, oh, for crying out loud, come on, people.
With it being a disco as well, I'm hoping that you're going to be able to have a little white paper bag of sweets and a little bottle of Panda Pop that you can have, just like you used to have at school discos. That'd be fantastic. How great would that be? Turn up, here's your bag of sweets, here's your Panda Pop. Go and enjoy yourself. There's a dance.
It was Presto in my day, son. Rimsky Korsakov.
It's what? Right, okay. Is that who what? Okay, so that really rounds off all the news we've got for the Disney parks themselves, but we have got a little bit of Disney Brit news, which we're going to bring to you. And actually, the first bit of news I want to bring to you is not necessarily Disney Brit related at all, but I wanted you to help support a really worthy cause. And I promised my wife, bless her Zoe, that I'd do this for her. And her and 10 of her friends are going to be running in the UK what we call the Race for Life, which is a 5K... race, I suppose, a little bit like the Tower of Terror or anything like that. And they're going to be running that in Leicester, and they're looking for people to come and sponsor them. And bless them, they've tried their hardest, and so far they need a total of £250. Nothing major, but so far they've raised £125. The event is on the 12th of July, and they would be really, really grateful if you guys would just, even if it's, you know, a few pence, would put some money aside for the helping them out. They are running the cause, the race, like I say, for a really good cause. The Race for Life is for cancer research. And unfortunately, somebody very close to all of us died this year, and that is the reason why they're doing that. And if you can go over to www.raceforlifesponsorme, all one word, so it's raceforlifesponsorme.org/team_9. You will find their page there. So please, even if it's 10, 15, 20 pence, please go over there and help support them as they go through doing this 5K race. Anyway, that's me doing a little bit of non-Disney Brit news, but I said I promised I'd get that in there for them. But we are going to be releasing...
It's a fantastic cause.
Sorry? Say again.
Just to say, it's a fantastic cause, so definitely do something for that.
Yes, please do. They'll be more than grateful. You know, they're working really hard towards doing that. And I'll try and get some photos up for you all to see when they've completed it. So we are releasing the podcast, as always. You obviously know that because you've downloaded it because you're listening to it now. But we have a first, because this time Disney Brit are also releasing our first ever vidcast. You may have been over to the website and you may have seen the video that we created from our sort of video diary from when we went to Disneyland Paris. And we're going to offer that as our first vidcast. And you're going to be able to download that. If you haven't done it yet, it's going to be part of the usual Disney Brit feed. So go over there to iTunes and download that as well as this episode of the podcast. So please go over and have a look at that. Certainly a lot of fun we had, and hopefully you'll see that when you watch the video. And the final bit of Disney Brit news is, of course, to announce our contest winner. And we're going to test you guys to see how you do with these questions. So, Juz and Joe. Now, Joe, I know you entered the contest, so you've got no excuse whatsoever. Juz, I know you're a founder of Disney Knowledge. So we'll see how you do. So here you go. Here's your two questions then. Your first question. So name the two arcades that run the length of Disneyland Paris' Main Street, USA.
You mean there's arcades there?
Yes.
When did they go in?
I don't know.
It's the arcade where Juz hid when Adam was embarrassing himself doing the Windows tour, and that was a mixture of Liberty Arcade and Discovery Arcade.
Exactly, our Liberty Arcade and Discovery Arcade. Okay, here we go then, Joe. Your question: who maintains the litter on Disneyland Paris' Main Street, USA?
It's the Main Street Sanitation Department, otherwise spelled.
It is the Main Street Sanitation Department. You're dead on, also known as the Main ST Dot Sanitation Department.
Okay. Can I just point out that we didn't know that till we found it on a dustbin on our trip?
Shh, you're not supposed to give away the secrets. Yes, that is one question we saw.
I'm too much of a nerd.
We didn't actually know that one. It was one we found. Okay, question three. Which British lyricist is a European Disney legend?
Apart from myself.
Yeah, apart from yourself.
Then it has to be the better looking of the two partnership, which is Tim Rice.
Indeed, Tim Rice, who wrote the lyrics for Lion King, also a European Disney legend, and has his name on a plaque at the outside of the statue, a statue outside the entrance to the Disneyland park. So, question four. This is my favourite question. Who won the first ever Disney Brit Buzz Lightyear Laser Blast Challenge? Who was it? Who won it?
It was two.
It was me, indeed. 437,200 points. Just got 90,600 points.
Just only get that?
Yeah, but hang on. I need to pick on Joe for a second. Who entered this competition, did put, but was it classed as cheating? And I want you to qualify this, please, Joe.
I'm sorry, but it's got video evidence, so you don't have much of a leg to stand on, Adam.
I won anyway. That's all that matters, and I'm in charge. It's all fine. It was me that won. But then there was also a bonus question, and this is the one that I honestly thought would get people, and this is the one that I thought, brilliant, no one would get this right, because it's quite a hard one. And yet most people seem to have got this, which was, what date was Disneyland Paris' Main Street USA City Hall founded? The year was?
79 minutes past six.
1879, indeed it was. It was 1879. And we obviously have a winner. And another reason why, Joe, you are on the podcast is because, Joe, you are the winner of our competition. Well done.
Fix.
Oh, thank you.
Fix. It's not a fix. I didn't pick them out. I'll hold my hands up. It wasn't me that chose them, but we did get them for you, and you've got some great stuff. Firstly, Joe, you have your Disneyland Resort Paris carrier bag. Okay. You've got your guide map. You've got your Mickey's Magical Party Time CD. You've got you've got your Disneyland Paris pen. The best one. And also, the final thing in my little bag here, you have got a Stitch Live pin, specially from Disneyland Paris. So we will send those things to you.
Oh, wow.
He just said he hated Stitch.
Thank you very, very much.
Beginning to hate Stitch, I think, was the word. But yeah, we'll send them to you, Joe. So well done. Thank you for entering the competition. We'll have another competition at some point soon. But that's pretty much it, really. That is all of the news for this episode of the podcast. I'd like to thank Juz always for joining us. Thank you, Joe, for coming along and joining us for the news. It's always nice to have extra people on the show every now and again. So thank you for coming and bringing your insight.
It's okay. I've really enjoyed it.
And we will see you again on the next section of the news. Welcome to the 11th edition of the Disney Brit Trivia Quiz, where we are once again going to bring you 8 questions, each getting progressively harder. But before we begin the quiz this time, I need to make a huge apology to all of you out there. Some people who were very, very awake noticed on the last episode of the podcast that there were 2 questions missing. Question 4 and question 6. And I apologise. I don't know what happened to them. They were definitely there when I was putting everything together. So I'm just going to give you the answers to question 4 and question 6 of the 10th Disney Brit Trivia Quiz. And then we'll move on to the show, the rest of the show. So, question 4 then, the 400 points, it was, in which Disney TV film, ride or attraction would you find Robin Williams and Rhea Perlman? And the answer was The Timekeeper. Now, the attraction was a Disneyland Paris original, but the popularity of it meant it had to be added to the Magic Kingdom's Tomorrowland on the 21st of November 1994. And it was presented in the Tomorrowland Metropolis Science Centre using Circle Vision 360 film. Robin Williams voiced The Timekeeper, Rhea Perlman as 9-Eye and Jeremy Irons as H.G. Wells. Now that was question 4 from the last quiz. Question 6 was a bit of a tricky one. It said, in which Disney location would you find Beverly? So in which Disney location would you find Beverly? And the answer is, of course, Club Cool. Now, formerly known as Ice Station Cool, this area located next to Interventions in Epcot lets guests experience different Coca-Cola products from around the world. The drinks include Smart Watermelon from China, Kinley Lemon from Israel, Thai Guarana from Brazil, Vegetabata from Japan, Lift Apple Mexico, Crest Ginger Ale from Mozambique, and Beverly from Italy. If you have never tasted it, make sure there's a camera handy to get your reaction. Okay, so there are the two that were missing from the last episode. So let's get on with this month's Disney Brit Trivia Quiz. So we have, as always, 8 questions. Each of those questions get progressively harder. Make sure you've got your family ready to play number 11 of the Disney Brit Trivia Quiz. Okay, so let's start off at question 1 then for 100 points, and here is your question. In which Disneyland Paris land would you find the Videopolis Theatre? So in which Disneyland Paris land would you find the Videopolis Theatre? Question 2 then for 200 points. Mission Space took the place of which classic Epcot attraction? So Mission Space took the place of which classic Epcot attraction? Question 3 then for 300 points. In which Disney Resort Hotel can you see the Hoop De Doo musical review? So in which Disney Resort Hotel can you see the Hoop De Doo musical review? Question 4 then, 400 points. Where can you watch a drive-in movie, eat a burger, and still be inside? So where can you watch a drive-in movie, eat a burger, and still be inside? Question 5 for 500 points. In which Disney World theme park can you ride a different version of Space Mountain to the one you find in Tomorrowland? So in which Disney World theme park can you ride a different version of Space Mountain to the one you find in Tomorrowland? Question 6, so 6 for 600 points. In feet, exactly how tall is the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror in Disney's Hollywood Studios? So in feet, exactly how tall is the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror in Disney's Hollywood Studios? Question 7 then for 700 points. Which Walt Disney World attraction was supposed to change its musical group on a more regular basis than it does now? So question 7, 700 points. Which Walt Disney World attraction was supposed to change its musical group on a more regular basis than it does now? And finally, question 8 for 800 points. This is the hard one for this time. In Disneyland Paris, the archway that leads from Main Street USA to Adventureland has an Arabic pattern around it. What is so special about the inside corners of the Adventureland sign? I'll read that again. In Disneyland Paris, the archway that leads from Main Street USA to Adventureland has an Arabic pattern around it. What is so special about the inside corners of the Adventureland sign? Well, there you go. That is all eight questions for the 11th Disney Brit Trivia Quiz. Get your brains thinking. See if you can get any of those questions right. If you think you've got them all and you think you've got most of them, then please, as always, do send an email to disneybrit@hotmail.com and we'll make sure to include you when we give the answers out on the next edition of the podcast. Some people have been doing extremely well. Let's see how quickly people can get those responses in. We've had some that have been in within an hour of the podcast being released, a couple of hours within it being released. So let's see how many people can get as many of those questions right. Welcome to the final edition of our top seven for Walt Disney World. We have reached the ultimate moment where we announce your top seven must-sees for Walt Disney World. So let's get on with the show.
Welcome to the Walt Disney World Top 7 Must-Sees.
Yeah, thank you, Stacey. Okay, we'll carry on with that then. So let's start off over at number 7. And we're going to give you the official Walt Disney World Top 7. We're going to give you my number 7. We're going to give you Judge's number 7. Then we're going to give you your number 7. But before I carry on, I just want to clarify slightly. Now, this official Walt Disney World Top 7 is out of date now because when we started doing our Top 7, Disney was still using the Top 7 on their television resort televisions. And it seems now that Disney do the Walt Disney World must-sees. That's what they call it. So we're still going to stick with the top seven that they had, although it's tentatively a top seven. And we're going to give you ours as well. So let's start off with the Walt Disney World number 7.
Here it is, the number 7 must-see at Walt Disney World Resort, the Cirque du Soleil show, La Nuba.
Welcome to the Downtown Disney West Side, home of the Cirque du Soleil show, La Nuba. Now, all the Cirque du Soleil shows are different. That's why they have different names. And the La Nuba show is exclusive to the Walt Disney World Resort, so you can't see it anywhere else. No matter what your age, if you're up for a big, fat chunk of absolute eye, ear, and imagination candy, then grab some tickets and see the Cirque du Soleil show, La Nuba.
So there you go. Walt Disney World have decided their number 7 is, of course, Cirque du Soleil's La Nuba, a show that I've seen many times, a show that I absolutely love. And I think it's probably worth a visit. But number 7 for me, I'm going to give you my order. Before I do that, I just want to qualify what my top 7 is. I've decided to go for a top 7 that is family-friendly, that everybody can enjoy, and that is not necessarily too scary for too many people. That's what I've tried to do with my top 7. Juz, I don't know, what's your thinking behind your top 7?
My top 7? You put me down here now. It's completely selfish. It's what I like, and I don't care about my family.
Okay, that's fine. That's great, because we both have completely different top 7. So, of course, Walt Disney World is La Nuba. My number 7 in my top 7 of the Walt Disney World must-sees is Spaceship Earth. And the reason I put Spaceship Earth at number 7 is purely for the fact that it's such a classic attraction. It's one of those rides that, you know, you see as soon as you go into Epcot. It's a major draw for people. And it's had the recent update. I know people don't particularly like Judi Dench's voice in it, but I think, you know, to me, Judi Dench is a classic actress. She's, I think, still done an amazing job, even though she's not necessarily as good as Jeremy Irons or Walter Cronkite have been. But this is just such an ingenuitive, inventive, classic attraction. It just has to be, I think, in my top 7. So that is my number 7. So, Juz, what is your number 7?
Just to reiterate here that Adam refused to tell me his top 7, so, you know, it's really bizarre and coincidental now that my number 7 is Kilimanjaro Safari. Simply because, you know, I love it. I adore it. I was incredibly fortunate to do the Sunrise Safari, which gave me a complete different insight onto the safari. But it's one of those things that if I'm at Animal Kingdom, I've got to do. And if I'm just Disney, I've got to do Kilimanjaro Safari. I just love it. I don't care about the animals. I love the storyboard and I love the whole trip of it all.
Yeah, it's definitely a great one, Kilimanjaro Safaris. A really good sort of opportunity to see something a little bit different. OK, let's move on to then the official Walt Disney World number six.
The number six Walt Disney World must-see
is Kilimanjaro Safari. Woo! We're four-wheeling now, baby. Just through the African village of Harambe is an actual living, breathing African savanna. I love the dress. It's home to lions, crocs, giraffes, elephants, hippos, cheetahs, and all other kinds of wild creatures that you'll see as you ramble through on your safari vehicle. I see giraffes over there. Disney's Mother Africa, right here in Florida, that puts Kilimanjaro Safaris on our list for the top seven must-sees at Walt Disney World.
Don't go away. When we come back, the number five must-see at Walt Disney World Resort.
So there you go. Number six was indeed Kilimanjaro Safaris. Juz, you're obviously a mind reader because you put yours at number seven. And I'm going to give you my number six. And this is an attraction, I say, I think has become, I suppose, a modern-day classic because I just love this one so much. It's one I would go and see again and again and again. It had so many firsts. The first 4D sort of attraction within the Magic Kingdom. It's the first time that classic Disney characters had been animated using computer technology. It's the first time a lot of these different scents were used. It's the first time this intelligent lighting system was used in the Magic Kingdom as well. And that's Mickey's PhilharMagic. I just think it's such an immense attraction, just so much fun, so many different elements to it. It's just one that I think, you know, it's a must-see for me. I must go and see PhilharMagic. Don't feel a trip to Magic Kingdom is the same if I haven't been to PhilharMagic. So that's my number six. Juz, go on, what's yours?
I really do like PhilharMagic, although it's not maybe my top seven. Always remember PhilharMagic to go in with your full body armour on, which is a great thing. Playing rugby is the fact I've got my helmet and body armour, because you get beasted up when you go through there. It's ruthless, it really is. It's one of the weirdest, you've got to admit, it's one of the weirdest queuing systems, isn't it? Because they just jump you in that auditorium and go, the doors won't open, run for it.
It really is a bit like that, yeah. Yeah, it is a bit like that. And that's because of the mistakes of building back when it was originally the Mickey Mouse Revue, because actually they just built it as an area for people to wait before they went into the theatre for that, and they didn't build the area big enough. And that has had a knock-on effect, obviously, as things have gone in over the years, becoming Magic Journeys, becoming just a Fantasyland theatre for cartoons, and then obviously becoming a theatre for PhilharMagic. It's not necessarily changed the wait area any. But go on, what's your number six?
I'm sorry, I felt like I was a prompt then for you to go into Disney Geek mode.
Sorry, yeah. Apologies.
Number six, something I love to bits, Everest. And this is actually something my whole family love. I mean, we did it, five times in a row recently. But no, Everest for me, you know, it's one of the newest rides. Technology's there, it's brilliant. And we're talking about Everest, which is in full mode, not these days when everything's turned virtually off. When you've got the full mist and you get attacked properly, Everest is beyond a doubt one of the best themed roller coasters there is.
And I've got to admit, I do have an honourable mentions list, and I have got Expedition Everest on that. I've got five on my honourable mentions. Expedition Everest is definitely on my list. It's something that I will do when I go. Okay, so let's move on to number five.
The number five Walt Disney World must see.
Check it out. Next on our countdown, and Disney Water Park's latest invention, Crushing Gusher. This Hydro ride's a little different from the rest. It's actually like a water coaster. So pretty much your ride raft becomes the ride of your life raft. Here's what happens. The Crushing Gusher's super-powered water jets launch you, boom, like a slingshot on steroids, then square you uphill and down and through hairpin turns faster than you can say, where's my bathing suit? Sounds like fun, right? So let's hit it. Heads up, hairpin turn.
Don't go away. When we come back, the number four must-see at Walt Disney World Resort.
So there you go. Number five on the list for the official Walt Disney World list is Crush and Gusher, the water coaster over at Typhoon Lagoon. Do you know, it's not even one I'd thought of, not even something that had even crossed my mind to have an attraction at a water park. I don't know. Have you done Crush and Gusher?
Without me getting on the soapbox, which I hardly ever do, Crushing Gusher, let's see, it damaged my son to pieces. He came off with so many bruises and cuts off this, I was horrified. if you've got a really small child who might fall in between the ring on this, I wouldn't take them on it.
Yeah.
Bizarrely enough, I've seen a family now suing Disney, and I thought, why didn't I think of that in the first place? It is a great ride, but don't take little kids who are going to fall in between the rings, because the jets and the power lanes will really hurt them.
Yeah, they are painful. But that's a Walt Disney World top five. It didn't make it into our top five because we didn't think it was worthy enough. But my number five, and I think you're going to be shocked by this, that it's actually this high up on my list.
Are we shocked?
I have put Illuminations as my number five in my top seven must-sees.
I'm off, bye.
That was a teeth dryer then from Juz. It's one of these... I love Illuminations. It's another thing that I must see when I go to Walt Disney World. The music is amazing. The actual globe in the centre is fantastic. But, you know, as much as I love the fireworks, there's just something about them that just underwhelms me a little bit. It's a lot of it is sort of ground fireworks. I know it's with the music, and to me, the music makes it. I think if we had a really naff score for Illuminations, people wouldn't bother. I think it's the music that makes it, and that, as a fireworks show, I think for me, lets it down a little bit. Don't get me wrong, I love it, and I will still go and see it every time I'm there. But for me, I think Illuminations is, you know, it's the fireworks aren't as good as I'd love them to be. It's the music that really holds it up. So that's why I put it in number five. I didn't put it any higher up on my list. What's your number five?
I'm not talking to you anymore now.
Come on, what's your number five?
My number five is, funny enough, your number seven. It's Spaceship Earth.
Excellent.
I love it. I've got to do it every time. I wish, you know, they'd never change it in some ways. It just epitomises Disney to me. It's... The whole thing is great, and I can do it again and again. And it's bizarre because it's not a white knuckle ride or anything like that. It's just pure Disney heaven to me.
Mm, yeah, it's a brilliant ride. Okay, so let's go over to your list. You may notice we haven't done them yet, but we're going to give you number 7, 6, 5. No, we won't give you 4. We'll give you 7, 6, and 5 from the Disney Brit top 7. Now, emphasise, this is the ones that you chose. You went online, you voted for them, and these are the ones you brought in. At number 7 on your list was a Magic Kingdom classic, and that is Pirates of the Caribbean. Only just made it onto the list, and I'll explain a little while later as to why it only just made it onto the list. Number 6, another one that only just made it onto the list, and that is The Haunted Mansion. I was shocked, absolutely shocked, Haunted Mansion is at number 6. And number 5, this one, a good thrill ride over at Hollywood Studios. You have put Twilight Zone Tower of Terror as your number 5 on your list. Any surprises there, Juz?
Yeah, Pirates and Haunted Mansion. I didn't expect to see them that low, to be honest.
Well, I say, I'll explain as to why they only just made it on the list in a second. But before we carry on, let's go on to the official Walt Disney World top number 4.
Check it out. The number 4 Walt Disney World must-see.
Here we go. Space Mountain, Splash Mountain, and Big Thunder Mountain. And lucky me, I'm going to hit them off. Triple Mountain Whammy. That was so great. Big Thunder Mountain. Wham, wham.
Okay, this is the point where I sort of laughed out loud when I was researching through this, because number 4 on the Walt Disney World list is, of course, the Magic Kingdom Mountains.
This is cheating, isn't it? It's like me saying, yes, Epcot is one of the must-sees.
I might be wrong, but I reckon there's 3 of them, not 1. I might not be able to count properly or something, and I might have got this completely wrong, but I'm pretty sure there's a Splash Mountain, a Space Mountain, and a Big Thunder Mountain. So, yes, Disney, you have cheated on your own top 7. You've cheated yourself, nobody else.
Can I point out there that when you go, there isn't 3? Yeah.
So there's 3, right? There is 3. There's 3.
Not when you go.
When I go, there isn't. That's true. Oh, no. Oh, I forgot about that. Space Mountain's closed. Rubbish.
I'll stand in front of it and I'll pretend. So, yes, there is three, although obviously at the moment there is not. So, my number four then, let me give you it. Another one that is going to become a classic without a shadow of a doubt. We've seen that because it started to build, they've started to build it around the world. There's a new computer game coming out for it. Number four is Toy Story Mania. Hit my number four spot. Again, another great family attraction. Anybody can go on it. Even if you're not old enough to actually be able to shoot spring action shooters, you can still sit there and really enjoy the seeing Buzz and Woody in 3D and all of the elements that go with it. So that's made my definite top seven must see. What's your number four?
If I was doing a family top see, it would definitely be in there. But as I went for the sort of selfish Juz aspect, I've gone for Soaring, which once again is one of those ones where, you know, it's almost like, well, you actually just sat in front of a big projection screen. I love it. I think it's absolutely incredible. I'll try and go on there a couple of times if I can. The whole experience is amazing for me. So my number four is Soaring.
Excellent. Another one that's made my honourable mentions list. I'll admit to that. It's another one that, again, I love to go on. I think it's one of those rides that I love, but if I could only do so many attractions, it'd be one that if I missed, I don't think I'd be overly fussed about. But again, another excellent attraction. What's number four on your Disney Brit list then? And this, I'm pleased this one made the top seven. Number four on the Disney Brit top seven is Fantasmic. A fantastic evening show. You guys have said you must go and see this show. Do you agree?
Yeah, I love it. I think it's brilliant. It's fantastic. I hate the wait. I hate the cramming in there. But once the show starts, what an awesome show. You can't argue with that.
No, you can't at all. So that is number four on your list. So let's move on to the official Walt Disney World top number three.
Hey, fasten your seatbelts, ladies and gentlemen, because next on our countdown is an attraction raced in from Disneyland Paris.
Whee! Get ready. Here's the number three must-see attraction at Walt Disney World Resort.
Lights, motors, action, extreme sunshow. It was hot. The precision driving was awesome. Now you can forget about the edge of your seat. This thing is so high octane, it might as well not even have a seat. It's cars nearly missing, motorcycles jumping in your face. Don't want to miss Action Club. And you know what? You can check it out right here at the Disney Studios.
Sit tight. When we come back, the number two must-see at Walt Disney World Resort.
There we go. It's, of course, lights, motors, action, stunt show, spectacular. Now, obviously, I think this top seven was rigged a little bit for the Year of Million Dreams, Happiest Celebration on Earth. And there seems to be a lot of the sort of Happiest Celebration on Earth ones that have made the top seven because they're new. I personally wouldn't put Lights, Motors, Action in my top seven. I've seen it at Disneyland Paris so many times. I've seen it at Walt Disney World, and it's just becoming a bit stale to me. I don't know. Would this be something that you'd be sad if you didn't see?
No, not at all. No disrespect to them. As you quite rightly say, the list is ever so slightly rigged in certain things' favour. It doesn't justify being there. It isn't the essence of Disney. I can see why they're pushing it because they want you to go and see it, but no, shouldn't be there.
No, definitely shouldn't be there at all. So it's definitely not made my top seven, but my number three is your number seven. It is Pirates of the Caribbean. Made it right up there at my number three. It's, again, one that I would be distraught if I didn't see. I think it's my second favourite ride in Walt Disney World, which gives you a clue as to my two and number one. It's my second favourite ride in the whole of Walt Disney World, something that I absolutely love. Now we've got Johnny Depp and all of those characters included from the Pirates of the Caribbean movies. Just adds more to it. So, number three is what for you, Juz?
Well, it is my first favourite ever ride sort of attraction at all, and it's the same as you. It's Pirates, without a shadow of doubt. I adore it to pieces, love it. I like the old version, I like the new version. I just embrace it completely. And I think, you know, one of the best pictures in the world is me and you discussing Pirates. Most of the I think it's on your Facebook page
it
somewhere,
is, yeah.
isn't it?
It's on my Facebook page, yeah. So we both picked it as number three, which is fantastic. So there we go. So that's our number three. Your number three, on the other hand, is one that didn't even make Juzzy's list and only made it to number six on mine. You've decided Mickey's Fill of Magic is the third most important ride or show that you must see when you go to Walt Disney World. So Mickey's Fill of Magic made it to number three. So that's a pretty decent position for that to be in.
Mm.
Let's move on then to Walt Disney World's number two.
It's time for the number two must-see at Walt Disney World Resort.
Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you Soarin' and Mission Space. Let's fly. Let's see, full throttle or half throttle? Half should be fine.
When we come back, the number one must-see at Walt Disney World Resort.
And once again, Disney are cheating. It seems we have more than one. Soaring and Mission Space have made it to Walt Disney World's number two. Now, okay, we'll give them it a little bit. They are opposite each other in the theme park, which I suppose is something. But still, they've chosen two for number two. Maybe they got confused and thought they had to have two for two. But Mission Space and Soarin', again, both great rides. You've already had it in your top seven. Mission Space has made it onto my honourable mentions, as did Soarin'.
Go on, I think saying opposite each other, it's still, in the blazing sunshine of an August sun, a long walk in between the two of them.
Oh, yeah. You've got Imagination Pavilion to go past first. Then you've got the entrance to the World Showcase area of the park before you get over to sort of Mission Space from Soarin'. So you've got a good distance to travel, certainly, over there. But my number two, as I already said, Pirates was my second favourite ride, which obviously means there's a show in here somewhere, and it is at number two. Fantasmic has made it to number two, the second most favourite thing. It is the one show that I think if I didn't see while I was in Walt Disney World, I'd be really upset, because it's just such an amazing show. The fireworks, the characters, the spectacle, the music, the whole thing together on such a massive stage. I know it's something that you get to do on the Backstage Magic Tour, which I'm going on in August, which I'm so excited to actually be able to go backstage at Fantasmic, see how it all works. And now they've obviously reduced it down to a couple of shows a week. It's obviously harder to get into, and something that's really sort of made it a must-see for a lot of people. And that's definitely made it there to my number two spot. So what is your number two?
Can I say I've done a little bit of Disney cheats here?
Go on.
If Disney can do it, I can do it. My number two, and this would be... family get fed up after a while, but this is... If I was on my Todd, number two is the World Showcase.
That's a massive cheat.
It isn't a massive cheat.
That's every pavilion.
Every pavilion, because I could spend days there. And it's food related. And what I'll do is I'll go between each of the fast food kiosks and buy food and work my way around. So it's not as much as a cheat as some of the Disney ones, but I had to go for World Showcase. I'm sorry.
But World Showcase, I can't believe you've done that. Cheat. Your number two, on the other hand, is one that hasn't made it onto my list. As far as I know, I think it's made it onto Juz's list, and it certainly didn't make it onto the official Walt Disney World list, and I'm pleased you've put it there, because actually, when I was doing my top seven, this is one that I nearly put in, and I really toyed with whether I should put it in there or not, and that is number two. You have put Splash Mountain in place of some of the other attractions that could have been there. So Splash Mountain, I think, is a classic attraction, isn't it? I think there's no argument about that at all.
I think Splash Mountain's a really funny one, in the sense that if you cast your mind back to the first time you ever did it, the first time I ever did it, I didn't pay attention to a thing. So I had this horrible vision of this massive drop that was going to appear at some point. It's only when you do the second round you can actually enjoy it, because you know where the drop's going to be and it's not as bad as it looks from the outside. But when you walk past the bridge, if you first ever go in there and you see people screaming, dropping down at high speed, you don't enjoy the ride first, because you're going, oh, God, when's it going to happen?
No, you're right. And to be honest, the first time I didn't actually do it, because I wimped out halfway through the queue knowing full well I had that big drop at the end, and I just didn't do it. And it wasn't until a couple of years later when I went back and I went on it and I did that drop and I went, actually, there's nothing to be scared of. But you're right. There is that fear, knowing that Splash Mountain, that big drop is there. has the positive and negative impact. Of course, Disney put it there originally because their argument was, with that being the worst part of the ride, if people saw that and didn't like it, they wouldn't go on the ride, therefore not holding up the queue. But it does put that in your mind of, when is that coming? You know, when will that appear within the ride? And you don't necessarily take in as much as you'd like to.
And they do a small drop as well to make you think you're going to hit the big drop before you hit
That's
the big
right.
drop.
Yeah. They put a few in, don't they? Six altogether, I think, the drops. OK, so let's go over to the official Walt Disney World Top 7, number one.
We now return to the Top 7 must-sees at Walt Disney World Resort.
Welcome back. OK, this is it. The end of our countdown. It is time to reveal the number one must-see attraction at Walt Disney World Resort. A colossal new adventure looming on the horizon of Asia at Disney's Animal Kingdom. It's like they took the Himalayas and dropped them in Florida. Expedition Everest.
This is it, the number one must-see attraction at Walt Disney World Resort.
So, here's the deal. You're hopping a high-speed train through the Himalayas on your way to Mount Everest, right? Everything's hunky-dory until you start picking up speed and banking tight corners. Oh, and then there's the whole Guardian of the Mountain thing. Yeah, the Yeti, the abominable snowman, that thing is huge. He's not too thrilled to see you, so he freaks out. Then you freak out because he looks hungry. Then the train freaks out. It starts going backward. It was like all of a sudden, boom, the lights are gone. It's cold, it's dark. Let's do it, come on. That's what I'm talking about. Number one, baby.
Okay, number one then. They've only chosen one for their number one is Expedition Everest. I know one that just has already mentioned, one that's on my honourable mention list, one that didn't make your list, funnily enough. It's not something that you said, as a top seven, this isn't one I must do. And it also isn't my number one, because my number one is my favourite attraction in the whole of Walt Disney World. If I go to Disneyland Paris, it's the version they have there is my favourite attraction. Haunted Mansion, by far, is my favourite ride in the entire resort. So, what's yours, Juz? What's your number one?
Can I just point out, Adam, you're lying. I've been with Paris with you. It's a small world. I couldn't get you off that.
We didn't even touch that ride. We walked straight past it and didn't even think about it.
They wouldn't let us on.
They wouldn't let us, no. Just in case we'd look backwards all the way and not taking anything in.
My number one is probably no surprise in some ways, and it is Illuminations. And I think this almost goes back to, A, selfish, because I adore the music, love the show, but from a family perspective, is something that over the years we've enjoyed as a family. And for some reason, it sticks in my mind the different stages of my kids growing up, of how we've enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I'm putting that in the right kind of words, but I can definitely, memory-wise, I know while we were here when we did it this year, and I've seen my kids grow up with Illuminations, so it probably has a lot more sentimental value for myself. So Illuminations, it has to be for me.
Excellent. So Illuminations for you, so a show for you, a ride for me, Haunted Mansion. And for you guys, you chose a show as your number one. It wasn't Illuminations. Illuminations didn't even make it into your top seven. Fantasmic made it to number four. And number one on your list was Magic Kingdom's Wishes. You chose that as your top must-see at Walt Disney World on your trip. Interesting choice. I don't know. What do you think?
I think Wishes from California Grill or from a beach of a resort, Wishes from inside Magic Kingdom would never touch my number one because I've never met so many grouchy people at the end of a day as I have with Wishes.
Okay, so personal experience. Well, I was saying earlier that Pirates and Haunted Mansion only just made it onto the top seven. And one of the conditions I set up as we were doing these top sevens was that if we had a tie, then it would be the older attractions that would beat the newer attractions. So Pirates and Haunted Mansion obviously being from not quite both of them from the beginning, but near the beginning of the park opening. The others that tied votes were Soarin', Rock and Roller Coaster and Monorail to the Magic Kingdom. I'll explain why I didn't put Monorail to the Magic Kingdom in, because actually that would have opened at the same time as Haunted Mansion would. I put Soarin' in because it hadn't been open as late as Pirates, neither had Rock and Roller Coaster. But the Monorail to the Magic Kingdom, as much as it is a must-see, it's an almost have-to-see for a lot of people, because you have to get on the monorail from the Ticket and Transportation Centre to get to Magic Kingdom. So I didn't think it was necessarily worthy of a spot itself.
I could go by boat.
Unless you go by boat, of course, yeah. But I think it's one of those things a lot of people would probably choose to do anyway, at least once on their trip. So I felt that probably it would be cheating a place for a proper attraction if we put that in there. And then some of the others were slightly further down that list as well, were Test Track, and the Typhoon Lagoon Wave Pool, which I thought was a great shout from you guys. Something that is, as we talked about previously, is great fun to sort of just go and play in those 6-foot waves. But of course, I have my honourable mention list as well. I don't know whether you have one of these, but we've already talked about Soarin', Mission Space, Expedition Everest. On my list, I have Test Track. I have Twilight Zone Tower of Terror. Again, I put it on the honourable mentions because it's not necessarily something that everybody in the family is going to want to put. And I also put California Grill down as well, because I just think it's a fantastic place to eat. So, have you got any others down on yours?
I think you covered a lot. I mean, Toy Story Mania, I've raved about beforehand. I think, yeah, and Philomagic, of course, Mission Space, Tower of Terror. Test Track, I always think, could be a lot longer than it really is. I think the problem I found with this is, with the scope was that wide that, I don't know about you, my list of 7 changed several times before I got to where I wanted it to be.
Yeah.
And I think that's because there's just too much, you know, if I was looking at food, it'd be this or whatever. So this is why it became quite a selfish and personal thing in the end. It was like, well, what would I do if I was left on my own and said, you only had 7 things to do? Okay, I've missed out on World Showcase, which covers most of it. but I think probably the listeners have found exactly the same problem. You narrow it down to 7 things. It's like, ooh. And we all sit here and go, oh, we love that, and we love that. And that's the problem. We love a lot of things, and it's hard to decide which is better than the other. Because it's the mood of the day, where you are, and the time of the day, doesn't it?
And I chose my top 7 as I did, because I'm taking my little boy for his first trip to Walt Disney World this year. And it was, as I was going through it, I was thinking, you know, what are the things that he would enjoy and we'd be able to enjoy as a family? And it's quite nice that you took your top 7 from a completely different angles. As we said, we didn't really compare these at all. Well, we didn't compare them at all until we came to do this segment. And I wanted to look at that family side. And you are right, you know, this top 7 is false, because you're not just going to do 7 things. These are the 7 things that you've decided you must do on a trip. And then you're going to have another 7 things that you would do on a trip, and another 7 things that you'd do if you've got time. And you could split these 7 up, as we did, into top 7 places to eat, or top 7 things to do with under 5s, etc. You know, there's so many top 7s we could pull from these. And these are, you know, your collective. They're not, you know, there's no right or wrong answer to these. And I just think it's been a great journey to see how some of these things have come about, and there's some of the ideas that have been created. And that really rounds up our top 7. That's the end of our top 7. I want to say a big thank you to you guys for taking part, for going onto the forums, and for voting for your top 7 must-dos or must-sees of Walt Disney World. And I think, you know, we've got a really comprehensive list there, haven't we?
We do. And I think if people who are going for the first time start looking through the podcast that have been, we'll get an idea of what to look at each park. But also the fact that what we've reiterated here is, and I think what the listeners have reiterated here is, you know, Disney will produce you an awful lot of great memories for your family, and that is what will determine what your top 7 in your heart is in years to come.
Yeah.
The only thing we can guarantee is wherever you go in the world, there's nowhere like Disney to go to create those memories in the first place.
Well, we did say we were going to bring you a listener email segment to the show, and that is exactly what we're going to do, because you guys have been contacting us via Facebook, by email, and asking us all sorts of questions, sending all sorts of comments, and we've compiled all of those, and we're going to share all of those with you now. So let's start off with our first email. This one actually came through on Facebook, and it says the following. Hi, Adam. Is it possible you can answer a question for me? We have booked a short break to Disneyland Paris, our first time in May. We were wondering if we did any character meals like they do in Walt Disney World. We will be staying at Sequoia Lodge from the 21st to the 23rd of May. Many thanks, Teresa. Now, before you go, oh no, you're giving this out at the end of May, I have replied, so don't panic. But I thought you guys might like to know some of the answers as well. There are several choices, really, for character breakfasts in Disneyland Paris. Juz, do you want to chip in with the ones that you might have done before?
I'll be honest, it's quite like I've actually done no character meals. I've actually done the evening meals there. Although, bizarrely enough, I mean, let me say, first of all, Sequoia Lodge is bizarre because you can actually bump into characters quite willy-nilly, because I had to wait for an hour for young Adam to decide to actually appear at Disneyland Paris recently. And I bumped into Mickey and Minnie and Goofy at Sequoia Lodge, who were just walking around.
Ah, what, with nobody there?
They were the handlers. They weren't just walking around willy-nilly with some suitcases trying to find a room, trying to book in. But no, I mean, they were just wandering around with their handlers. And I think we've seen this at several of the hotels. Unlike the stateside, Disneyland Paris have a lot of character interaction throughout the day and away from character meals as well. I mean, you want to fill in the character meal side of things.
Yeah, I'll sort of go for the character meal, because obviously the question was a lot about, you know, what character meals are available. For me, number one at Disneyland Resort Paris is Cafe Mickey's. It's in Disney Village itself. It's a fantastic place. Alert now, it is not cheap. It is definitely not cheap, but it is a fantastic place to go to meet the characters. I suppose, in a way, I would relate it to something like Cafe Mickey's. Chef Mickey's, in Walt Disney World, over at the Contemporary. The characters come round, come in quite regularly. You have moments where we have song and dancing. The food there is great. The service there is great. Give you an example, I took my little boy when he was very young to Disneyland Paris. A few of us went. He decided he was going to kick off in the middle of the restaurant. He wasn't happy about being there, so he was crying because he was tired. He was quite young. So I took him outside and I left my very nice steak on the table. About 20 minutes later, after he'd calmed down, I brought him back, and the restaurant replaced my entire meal for no cost whatsoever because it had gone cold. And that's a sort of a great thing that they're at Cafe Mickey, so they do look after you well. If we go into the parks, you've of course got the Lucky Nugget Saloon. They have lunch and dinner there, so you can go for a buffet there. Again, it's not cheap. It's quite an expensive meal. You again have the classic characters. You can go for a tea party on at the Plaza Gardens restaurant, Main Street USA. There's all sorts of pastries and muffins and cookies and brownies, those sort of thing. Mad Hatter usually holds that, and the times alter, so when you book it, you need to ask about that. There's also a birthday party at the same place at Plaza Gardens. And Susie and Perla, who are two of the mice from Cinderella, they are hold a sort of an event at the... I've forgotten off the top of my head what the name of the place. The Auberge du Saint-Brélion, that's the one, in Fantasyland, where you can go and have a proper three-course meal, sit down with the characters, the princesses are normally there, and it's a very sort of Disney storybook style. That's the most expensive one out of all of them. I think it's roughly, off the top of my head, around about €50 an adult and about 20-something euros per child. You get your photo included in that as well. And it's a lovely setting, and the foods are supposed to be fantastic. I haven't eaten there myself, but it's definitely sort of an expensive thing. And if you're going to do a character dining, I think you choose one. I wouldn't go for more than one, to be honest. I think it's going to be far too expensive to sort of try and do many of them. But I would definitely think about going to do breakfast maybe at Cafe Mickey's. If not breakfast, dinner in the evening is certainly a great way to round off your day. Quite happy to sign autographs and things there. So hopefully that answers the question. Sorry, go on.
You just chip in, actually, because, I mean, if you're talking about the park character meals, we have done a couple. We've done all of them. Including Norbert, which, to be honest with you, has the most limited children's menu I know of. My personal favourite is a Lucky Nugget Saloon.
Yeah.
Really nice setting, loads of characters, a good time. And the characters vary. It's quite, you get about sort of six or seven characters from Tigger to Pinocchio, etc. The only thing I say with Lucky Nugget, and I mentioned this now and I mentioned it before, is it's bizarre. When you finish your meal, wait for your receipt. You are not allowed out of the restaurant unless you have your receipt. Because it's a buffet style, they assume that people would wander out without paying. And the amount of queues you get, people stood there going, yeah, I can't let you out because you've got no receipt. So when you do go there, if they don't mention it to you, hang on until you get that receipt, because that's the only way you're going to get out of that building.
Good tip. Excellent tip. Yeah, definitely do that. Okay, let's move on to next email then. It says here, hey there, I think it was during one of Juz's penny-pinching segments that you were talking about three things that you could do at Animal Kingdom. One of the things mentioned was go to school in Harambe. I never knew about this. Can you tell me more about it, please? Where do you do it? What is it like? Thanks, Denise. Now, Denise is one of our listeners. She owns the scoutingwiththemouse.com. It's a website, an ingenious website that combines scouting activities with Walt Disney World vacations, where you can earn badges by doing things within Walt Disney World, which is a brilliant, brilliant site. Definitely go over there and have a look. The US scouting requirements are on there, and she's recently been putting some UK scouting requirements. Go and have a look at those. But in answer to a question, have you ever been to school in Harambe?
It's really good. I mean, it sounds really, you know, oh, let's go to school, kids. It's really good because they go through the actual culture and the country and how they live. It's actually located in Africa. And if I remember correctly, it is in the Mombasa marketplace, and it's just across. There's loads of benches just across from the shopping area.
Yep.
And it's just in there.
It is exactly there. You're dead on.
It's just a great, great experience. And I think, it's bizarre enough, I think, you know, from kids or adults, I found it really interesting because these people have come across from Africa and they do give you a slightly different insight of some of their cultures and why. And they can relate it to actually Africa in Animal Kingdom, which just shows how authentic it is as an area.
Yeah, it's a great little place just to stop. And it's not very long. And it is just, you know, to learn a little bit more about Africa, about the country itself, about the people, about the culture. And it's very, very short, but it's an excellent thing to stop for. But thank you, Denise. Do go and check out our website, scoutingwiththemouse.com. Excellent place to go and have a look over there. Okay, let's move on then. We have another email, and it says, I've just listened to episode 12, my first of yours, a few days ago, and added it to my list. I've been meaning to subscribe for a while because my neighbour, Steve Sanders, is a big fan of your show, and that is from Brian Maltzoff. He is the host of the Your Ear to the World podcast over on the WDW News Today podcast. Group of podcasts over there. Thank you, Brian, for your comments. I know who's certainly been listening to the show a little bit recently. It's great to see we've got new listeners, whether from the US or the UK. Okay, next email. A little bit of a long one, this. Hello, Adam and Juz. I wanted to let you know that I am a new listener to the show and I'm really enjoying the podcasts. In the past 120 days, I've listened to 206 podcasts back to back, and they recommended your podcast. As I am up to date with their podcasts, I have started to listen to yours, and I have listened up to episode 8 and have a few more shows left before I am up to date. I have joined your Facebook group too. I have only 9 days until I visit Orlando and the Walt Disney World, and I am so excited. Your podcasts are quite different from the ones by Inside the Magic. I enjoy the humour on the show and find that it's more personal with the British touch and with updates from Disneyland Paris, which is closer to home. I have been to Disneyland Paris 3 times and loved it. I have only visited Orlando once back in 2004 and only visited one Disney park, MGM Studios. And when we go back in 9 days, we are going to visit the whole of Walt Disney World's parks. Can't wait to try my first Dole Whip at the Magic Kingdom and ride the fantastic attractions, meet my first skipper, take in the heat as it's been so cold here in the UK, take tons of photos and just enjoy being in the best place in the world. You hear us all the time, but I would like to thank you for all your hard work and efforts with the podcast and keep the Disney magic alive. Regards, Peter Albanese from Swindon, Wiltshire. Thank you for your email, Peter. It seems strange that somebody's been to Florida and only ever been to what was MGM Studios at the time. There's so much to offer from all of the parks, isn't there? So much great stuff that each of the parks sort of brings to people when they go over there.
I just think, since when we're in a hubris show, I thought we were a serious show. You're dragging it down.
I'm dragging it down, I'm sorry.
It's got things that need picking up or collecting. Yeah, anything that you manage to swipe and knock, then I'm willing to accept. Reserve signs are really good.
You've got to tell the story of that now. You've said it so many times.
The only reason I mentioned it is because I got it in my hand at the moment.
Oh dear, awful. Okay, we'll move on before you get arrested. We have an audio, I suppose, email from Joe. Joe was on the news right at the beginning of the show, who received one of our trivia DVDs for winning one of our competitions. And Joe wanted to send in an audio review of the DVD itself. So here is that review.
Hello, Adam and Juz. This is Joseph Carter. This is my review of the Disney Brit Trivia DVD game. I was really pleased to win the DVD, as, of course, I absolutely love Disney knowledge and Disney trivia. So when it came in the post, it went straight into the computer. And I was greeted, first of all, with a picture of Adam, and he had 8 different quizzes surrounding him. Now, each quiz has 8 questions about Disney parks, about Disney company and Disney films. And with each question, you're given 4 different possible answers. You click your chosen answer, and you're then taken to a screen which shows the correct answer and a list of facts and trivia based on that question. For example, if it's a question about the Haunted Mansion, you're given a list of information about the Haunted Mansion, about Phantom Manor. But yeah, I definitely learnt a thing or two. It's definitely good for any Disney geek. Certainly got some really invaluable information. But after you complete the quiz, you're then given a personal rating, which is based on how many correct answers you gave. And I'm glad to say that I was mainly classed as a Disney guru, which meant that I got 7 out of 8 on most of the quizzes. So there's definitely a few very, very tough questions in the quizzes, which took a few times for me to get right. But regarding the look of the DVD, I loved the music, sort of a Who Wants to Be a Millionaire style music. And I thought that all the cartoon characters, which were drawn by Juz, were great. That my favourite one was a superhero. And I've heard on the grapevine that that was actually based on Juz himself. But overall, I really, really enjoyed playing the Disney Brit DVD game. It's certainly something that I would play again. And also, if you have a trip to Disney soon, you can always get the family involved and have a family game. So it sort of gets people a bit more excited about Disney, if they're not already. So thank you very much, Adam and Juz, for the game. And keep on with a great show. You're doing a brilliant job. And of course, I always look forward to the next episode. Anyway, that's it from me. Speak to you soon. And see you at Mouse Meets. Bye-bye.
Right, Joe, thank you for that review. It's great to see that people are enjoying the stuff that we create. You know, we create these things for you guys to enjoy. We don't do them because it's a money-making scheme. It isn't, because we're not selling those. We're giving them away to you. And we're really pleased that, you know, people are getting the benefit of the reason we created them. And thank you for sending in that review.
Okay, if you send me £20 in via PayPal, I'll send you one.
Yeah, stop it. Right, we're going to move on to the next email. It says, hi, just wanted to say thanks for a great podcast. Been listening since episode 1 and it just gets better and better. I usually listen while I'm working and it certainly makes the time go faster. Keep up the work. That's from Nettie. So just a short email there.
It gets better and better because I came into episode 6.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to get last two emails sort of relate to the Credit Crunch tip that you gave only a couple of weeks ago, and it reads the following. Hi guys, stumbled across the brilliant podcast last week. I also subscribe to Mass Planet Inside the Magic, which are great, but an American-based podcast. Where are, as yours givers, Disney Brits, our own podcast? Certainly picked up on a few tips in the first 4 I have listened to. Just finished listening to the latest one, episode 15, and you mentioned buying a pay-as-you-go mobile from Walmart. I did this 2 years ago and will always plan to do it. I also plan to do it this November when we go out again. I purchased a TracFone Motorola Mobile, about $15, I think, and also later on a $10 top-up card. Previous 2 years, I had used post office phone cards. TracFone was brilliant for about the same cost as the phone cards. I had a mobile to make calls from anywhere instead of the hotel lobby. The highlight was my daughter was able to phone her grandparents from the Magic Kingdom in front of Cinderella Castle on her 8th birthday. Cannot recommend the TracFone enough, as it also gives you the peace of mind when you are out and about. TracFones can be viewed on Walmart's website. One at the moment is advertised for $10. A no-brainer, in my opinion. My other tip is buggies from Walmart. They start less than $10, depending on quality, but are much cheaper than hiring one in the parks and saves one piece of luggage. We had one pinch last year, but just went back to Walmart and bought another, but got a marker pen and scrolled our name on it in big letters. One last thing. What software did you create the movie from Disneyland Paris on? Keep up the great work. That is from Paul. Having read that email and having listened to your Credit Crunch tip last night, I went onto Walmart's website and had a look ready for my trip out. And they are about $15. And there's currently a top-up card. Oh, sorry. Part of the deal with the TracFone is that every time you top up, it will give you double the amount of minutes that you pay for. Which is a fantastic deal. Also, you can get them, like you said, ordered and sent to a store. You have to pick them up within 3 weeks of ordering them. I emailed them to find that out. So if you're going sort of within 3 weeks, so obviously it takes about 10 days to get there, you've only got that 3-week window to go and pick those up. But, you know, a tip that obviously people have used before, and it proves that that's a tip that people use.
It's the way. It's the way to do it. It makes it everything a lot cheaper. You can get a couple if your family's splitting up to keep in touch with each other, or you know, in my case nowadays with a teenage kid, for the price of it, I'm quite happy to give him a phone that he could phone me where he is and vice versa, because he wants to go and do his own thing.
Yeah.
The thing about the buggies, I will say, is the fact that we have done this loads when we took the little one. I think the best idea, the $10, and just really nice. Well, we've given away buggies at the end of our trip. We said, look, we're going, and we've seen a British couple, said, look, do you want our buggy? For $10, who cares? And if you get to see someone else, pass it back on.
Yeah.
It just works out nice.
Yeah, a lot of people do that, because a lot of people, when they leave, they just dump them in the trash, and you see them and think, yeah, I could have passed that on. And people do that. They're nice enough to do that, to just pass those on.
I was one of those nice people.
There we go. Well, aren't you great? Aren't you lovely?
I am. I'm super. Okay. Charge them $20 for it.
Well, there's another email here. It said, Adam, the last time I used the site to store, you needed a US-issued credit card, which is okay for me, and you as the holder of that card need to collect it. It may have changed, but be careful. Also for phones, go for TrackPhone. $10, and you can call and text the UK as well. We have two, wouldn't be without them. Cheers as always, Craig. I think, as far as I understand it from looking at the website, you can use anything now. It's not just US-issued credit cards, so they've obviously rectified that. And then just another one, linked to what was sent earlier, Brian sent another message that just said, hi guys, this week another great show. I really like the Walmart site-to-store tip. That was interesting. I didn't know about that. That's from Brian. I also forgot to answer the question from Paul about what did I use to create the Disneyland Paris movie. It's actually, I use an iMac for recording, so I have something called iMovie, which I have iMovie 09, which is the latest version, which allows you to put all of those different bits and pieces in to create the video. So that's what I use for creating the video. For those people who want to know what I use for creating the podcast, I use something called GarageBand, which is also available on an iMac. I use GarageBand 09 for that as well. It gives you all the sort of the little bits and pieces. Well, that is the end of the listener email segment then.
Oh.
Well, that rounds up episode 16 of the Disney Brit Podcast. Thank you once again for joining us. We have to thank our sponsors, Attraction Tickets Direct and CompleteOrlando.co.uk. You can, of course, visit them at www.attraction-tickets-direct.co.uk. Can completely recommend them. I've just got my Disney tickets through them. They've arrived. Fantastic, fantastic service. And, of course, Complete Orlando at CompleteOrlando.co.uk. Thank you once again to Juz for joining me and for adding his interesting elements to the segment. We'd also like to thank our special guest, Joseph Carter, for joining us for the news and rumours. You can visit his website at www.joethedisneyman.blogspot.com. Be sure to check out some of the photos from our recent trip over at Disneyland Paris. They're on Facebook. Jizz has now put them up. And make sure, if you haven't done already, to download the first Disney Brit vidcast, which is now available through the usual iTunes feed. You can go over there and download that. Of course, we still always welcome your emails, your comments, your questions, and your suggestions. You can email us at disneybrit@hotmail.com. And please, what we're looking for especially is emails with tips on how to survive Walt Disney World during the summer heat. So if you've got any tips on how you've managed to go to Walt Disney World during the summer and you've survived, please do send those in, as we are going to be bringing you a segment on the next show on surviving the heat in Walt Disney World during the summer. You can, of course, go over to Twitter. You can find our Disney Brit and our Mouse Meat Twitter over there. You can join them as we update those for things for the show. You can, of course, leave a review on iTunes. Thank you to the people who have done that so far. It really is greatly appreciated, and people do get a feel for the show by listening and looking at what you've written over there on iTunes. You can, of course, go over to the Disney Brit website, which is www.disneybrit.com, and you can go over to the Mouse Meat section of the website, www.disneybrit.com/mousemeats.asp. As I've already mentioned, we've got our photos over on Facebook. You can friend up me and Juz over there. You can join the Mouse Meats group. You can join the Disney Brit group. There's now the
Disney Pod People group, which has got a massive amount of people. You can go and join all of those groups over there on Facebook. And thank you to those people who have also donated to the show. It really is appreciated. Don't forget, please, please, please do go over and sponsor my wife, Zoe, and all of the people that are taking part in the Race for Life over here at Leicester. They have got their sponsor page, which is www.raceforlifesponsorme.org/team_9. And that 9 is the word, not the number. So N-I-N-E. So it's www.raceforlifesponsorme.org/team_9. They've raised £125. They want to get to £250. And the event is on the 12th of July. And they really, really, really would appreciate your help with that. Don't forget that the show, the next show, episode 17, is going to be released on the 10th of July. So until then, I'll see you.